Hey everyone, today's episode is on the incredible Saint Rita of Cascia, a patroness of impossible causes, a protector of the abused, and a miracle worker, one of the most beloved saints of all time, and also one of the most fascinating, mysterious, and more. We begin this episode with Rita's cousin Antonia, working up the courage to go and speak and meet for the first time her mysterious cousin who has the wounds of Christ on her forehead to get advice. And then we end this episode, as we always do, with a deep dive into Saint Rita and how we can incorporate her into our spirituality and our practice. As always, please check out the Patreon. All show notes will be there. We've been having a lot of fun on Patreon. Just did 9 days of St. Michael, currently doing a week of St. Francis. There's deliverance prayers, there's rituals, everything I talk about in the podcast, I write about in detail there, so check that out. And nonetheless, everyone, I hope you enjoy. This was such a treat to write. This was probably one of my favorite opening stories yet. Thank you for all of your love, and enjoy. Antonia had never met her older cousin Rita, but she had heard the stories. Rita was mysterious, miraculous even. Antonia had heard myths and tales of holy men and women who could perform miracles and give guidance, but she never expected one to be in her own family. Antonia's parents were quiet about Rita, but Antonia always heard the whispers. She heard that Rita always wanted to be a nun, but her abusive husband made that a problem. So after his death, she could finally join the convent. The whispers that Antonia heard also said that Rita was brought to the convent by the ghost of St. John the Baptist and the ghost of St. Augustine when the Mother Superior denied her entry. But I guess the biggest thing was Rita's forehead. For Rita purportedly bore the wounds of Christ on her head, and it bleeds as if she's been pierced by the crown of thorns itself. Antonia knew of Rita, but she had never met her own cousin. So when Antonia came into a major problem in her life, her parents recommended that she finally go and see this mysterious relative, especially since it was said that Rita might not live much longer. She's getting older, is currently bedridden. So there Antonia stood at Rita's doorway in the convent, scared of the wounds, scared of the mystique, scared of this pious holiness, scared of being judged, and of course, scared by the idea that the angel of death loomed in the room above Rita. So when the door of Rita's cell creaked open, Antonia held her breath and stared at the floor, deciding not to even make eye contact until her cousin greeted her first. "Goodness, you look just like your mother," a joyful voice said. "Oh, tell me how she is. Come on, we certainly have years of catching up to do, don't we?" Antonia smiled, and her gaze met Rita's. The room was simple, a small bed with metal rails, a wooden crucifix hanging above it. There was a small table with a tattered Bible, and there were also roses. While Antonia thought of this as a sweet gesture that someone gifted her cousin in retrospect, it was likely to mask the smell of Rita's festering head wound. There was also a sound. Is that a buzz? What is that? A faster and closer buzz then quickly whipped by Antonia's head and she let out a shriek. Rita laughed hysterically. "Oh, those are my bees. They live in a corner there, but they're harmless. They're my friends. They won't hurt you. They keep me company. Now come sit." Antonia knew that this was not a normal woman, but she had expected that. Talking with her hands and with a melodious voice, Rita was quaint, animated, and charming. And of course, there was the wound. A bandage was on Rita's head and blood was still pooling as they spoke. Antonia kept catching herself staring, so she made a conscious effort to keep her eyes on Rita's nose, or else she'd make her cousin feel uneasy. But all in all, Antonia found Rita's presence calming. So on a small stool next to Rita's bed, Antonia began to discuss her life, her children, her husband. How much like Rita, maybe one day Antonia could also become a nun when her kids are grown, and Rita quickly snatched Antonia's hand. She sprung up in her bed, still holding on to Antonia's wrist. She pushed up Antonia's sleeves, which revealed bruises going all the way up her arm. "What is this, cousin?" Antonia hung her head in shame. This is why my parents suggested I come to see you. My husband, he hits you," Rita completed her sentence. "Yes," Antonia said with sorrow and shame. "So I want to become a nun just like you to escape him. My parents will raise our children for me. I just..." "Enough," Rita said. Her jovialness left and it was replaced by a contemplative face and an anger that was somehow soft and controlled. When Christ exorcised the demon out of the man wanted to follow Jesus. And can you believe that Jesus told him no? Christ instructed him to go be a father to his children and a husband to his wife. "You, dear cousin, you're no nun. You too need to return to your children. But first, we have to exorcise the demon that you're married to." Antonia was stunned, upset, emotional, but how do we... Rita cut her off again. "It will happen in a few weeks if God wills it. Your guardian angel is probably already working on it." Antonia's heart shattered. She felt dismissed, as if she came all this way for nothing. "Now," Rita continued, "there was this beautiful fig tree from the family garden. Would you mind going and fetching me a few figs and return tomorrow with them? Then we can continue this conversation. Actually, I need exactly 2 figs, thank you." Antonia shyly nodded. She hugged Rita, holding her breath as she got close to the infamous head wound. And then Antonia left, her mind reeling. The head wound, the bees, the icy expression that cut the conversation short, and the bees, why are there bees? Why do I still hear them buzzing? Figs? Why 2 figs? Do I get a fig? What just happened? Maybe I'll get more information tomorrow. But there wouldn't be a meeting tomorrow. Because that night, Rita of Cascia died in her cell. And a few weeks later at the funeral, Antonia was distraught, confused, confiding in relatives. She always wanted to become a nun, just like her famous cousins. And then Antonia felt a coldness come over her, a familiar one. Her husband was standing behind her, reeking of wine, giving her that look that she was all too familiar with, hatred, anger, and red drunken eyes. He gripped her wrist and chided her. "Why are you speaking to others without me? Be quiet, woman." "And a nun?" "Antonia, you don't have the discipline to be a nun. You're pathetic." The walk home was somber and scary. Antonia's mind was still reeling from the brief interaction with her cousin, the funeral, and of course, her abusive husband. He was drunk, and she knew she'd get a beating when she returned home. The sun had set, it was dark, and she wanted to run into the dense woods off the dirt path, never to be seen again. Her husband was ranting and raving, his arms flailing about, but Antonia wasn't even listening, just watching her feet make imprints into the dirt. She had become good at tuning out his rage, his verbal abuse. Because if she talked back, it would only get worse. But there was one thing she did hear. "Is that buzzing?" It was. It was a lot of buzzing. She looks over to her husband, who was yelling and screaming, begging Antonia for help as a swarm of bees encased him. An entire cloud of bees, blocking the moon, there were so many. Her husband took off through the dark forest. Antonia instinctively took off after him, yelling after him, but not really sure what advice to give him in this scenario. And what is this feeling? Is this relief? Is this joy? Am I laughing? That must be a sin. Follow your husband, Antonia. Her husband keeps running and screaming, Antonia only knowing where he is through limited moonlight, buzzing noises, and the sound of frantic footsteps. And then the buzzing stops. The steps stop. But a scream is heard, echoing, becoming more faint. The voice was falling, decrescendoing into a loud, empty thud. Her dear husband, after being chased by a swarm of bees, ran right off a steep ravine. He didn't even see it coming. Pathetic. Antonia, out of breath, her eyes getting used to the dark, followed the footsteps and sees the steep, unexpected drop. Is he dead? Where are the bees? Why am I smiling? Exhausted, she sits next to a tree, instinctively reaching up, finding two figs on the branch above her. She takes a bite out of one and leaves another on the path for her cousin. Thank you, Rita, she says. Thank you. Peace be with you, and with your spirit. Welcome to another episode of St. Anthony's Tongue. I am your host, W. St. Rita of Cascia prayed that her sons would someday find God. And then they died. And this really summarizes the whole ambiance of the life of St. Rita. One of the most beloved, unusual, and otherworldly saints of all time. And the original saint of impossible causes. So who was she? St. Rita was born in 1381 in Umbridge, Italy, and she was her parents' only child, and she was considered a miracle because her parents didn't think that they could conceive. And since she was an only child, it was important that her parents find her a husband so she could continue their family legacy. However, young Rita was a very spiritual and devout girl. She didn't want to be married. She wanted to become a nun in the nearby town of Cascia. However, she was a good girl and she agreed to obey her parents. And they arranged a marriage when she was just 12 years old with a small-time crooked politician named Paolo Mancini. The next 18 years of Rita's life was hell. Her husband was a liar, a thief, a drunk, a cheater, and worst of all, an abuser, both verbally and physically. Her husband was eventually killed in a vendetta against a family that he had screwed over, and he had many vendettas. Her two sons were much like her father, and they vowed to continue this family war, and they sought revenge on their father's killers and their entire family. And Rita feared for their souls, so she prayed that they'd find God. And then they died. Another version of that story is that Rita prayed that they'd die before their souls could be tainted by committing murder. Either way, it shows, be careful what you pray for. It also shows how vile her children were in danger of becoming. So Rita's finally free. She doesn't have a husband or children, and she could finally fulfill her dreams of joining the convent in Cascia. However, she was rejected 3 times. And the most popular story is that she was rejected because she was not a virgin, because she had children. I personally don't really buy too much into that reasoning, because it was actually very common for widows to become nuns, especially in the early church and Middle Ages. Not only was it common, it was a very noble thing to do because a lot of widows, they had inheritances of some sort, so they would give money to the convent as well as join it. There were some strict orders who wouldn't accept non-virgins, but widows, regardless, were usually accepted. And I'm bringing that up because the other likely story is actually much more interesting. Alternatively, it was believed that the monastery or the convent, it wouldn't allow her in because they were worried about this family war that was going on between her deceased husbands, the sons, and the father. They were worried that this enemy family would come and track her down to the convent and cause trouble, or they were concerned that maybe she was just using the convent to hide and she wasn't really sincere. But eventually the monastery relented and they allowed her in. And much like many things with Rita, there's a logical explanation and a mystical explanation. The logical was that the convent finally gave in to Rita's request and allowed her in when her husband's family publicly forgave the killers. So they settled the score, which is also very medieval, coming and having a public, you know, ceremony where you bury the hatchet, as it were. But the mystical story that, of course, I love was that after her third rejection, she petitioned her patron saint, John the Baptist. And then one night, Saint John the Baptist appeared with Saints Augustine and Nicholas of Tolento, who was a kind of a local regional saint. And they transported Rita through the convent walls and directly into the office of the Mother Superior. And the Mother Superior, finding out she had already made it through the gates and into the convent, she just let her stay. And you also have to remember, getting inside of a convent or a monastery back then was very tricky because typically they were their own villages and they were closed off by gates or even drawbridges. So it was no easy feat to suddenly appear in the middle of a guarded, gated convent, and especially in the room or the office of the Mother Superior. And here begins all of the mysterious miracles surrounding Rita. A popular legend is that the Mother Superior, likely already fed up with Rita and her persistence and the fact that she just teleported in, she wanted to teach Rita patience. So she asked Rita to water a stick every day until it blossomed. And miraculously, the stick eventually bloomed into this beautiful grapevine. And it still exists today in the convent, the Augustinian convent in Cascia. And the grape leaves are harvested and they're pulverized and they're packaged and they're sent to the ailing and sick for blessing. Even the Pope is sent these crushed, blessed leaves for healing. And it's a gift from Rita to the Pope. In miracles such as the blooming grapevine, escaping an abusive marriage and family, being accepted into a strict monastery, despite and against all odds, it makes her the saint of impossible causes. And yes, Saint Jude is the most well-known saint for impossible causes, but Rita's moniker predates Jude by a little bit, and to me, it better reflects Rita's life story. The Jude tie-in of impossible causes is very folksy. It centers around this idea that not enough people were petitioning Jude because they thought he was Judas. So it's very circumstantial, but Rita's life is very much filled with her overcoming the impossible. And then you have the stigmata. In 1441, Rita was listening to a sermon on the suffering of the crown of thorns, and she was so deeply moved, and she prayed to Christ to share in his suffering. That's very common for saints, especially in the, this is like late Middle Ages, it's not really medieval times, but especially that time period, up to the 15th, 16th centuries. It's very common for flesh mortification to want to be close to Christ by sharing in his pain. And when she prayed that, instantly she felt a thorn penetrate her forehead and a wound appeared. And in her depictions, you're going to see different ones. Sometimes she is wearing the crown of thorns. It's very easy to get her image and Catherine of Siena's mixed up. But a lot is just a single thorn in her forehead. And while some people would think this made her a revered holy woman, It actually grossed a lot of the fellow nuns out. It said that the wound would fester with maggots crawling in and out of it, in which she called her little angels. So let's pause here. Let's do a recap. This woman who prayed for her sons to die, and they instantly did, she's mysteriously teleported into your convent with the help of three well-loved dead saints. She makes grape leaves grow from dead sticks that are used for healing. She gets the stigmata on her head and now sports a bloody holy wound. It is a very creepy roommate. And of course, the miracles kept coming with Rita. So she was frequently visited by relatives and just by townspeople who heard of this great saint, potential future saint who has the wounds of Christ, so they began to come see her for healing. And several months before her death, she was bedridden, and her cousin asked if she could get anything for her. And Rita wanted a rose from the garden of her childhood home. And it was the middle of January, and there had just been a terrible ice storm. But the cousin humored her, and at least she could tell Rita, "I checked and I tried." Sure enough, though, there was one single rose on an otherwise dead bush. And when the cousin returned, Rita asked for two figs in the same frozen dead garden, and sure enough, there were two singular figs. In the night Rita died, her stigmata wound on her head, it glowed very brightly, and she levitated in her bed throughout the night, and sisters would come and say their goodbyes, and probably, let's be honest, would also want to see Rita levitating. But when they would come and say their goodbyes, they would be healed of various ailments. You know, one had a paralyzed arm and it was healed. The other had a skin condition and it was healed. Rita wasn't buried. She was placed in a glass reliquary, very much like Snow White. And some would say her eyes would open or her body would levitate in the glass coffin. And the man who crafted this coffin, it was said that he was too ill to finish it, so they needed to find someone else. But this was a very obviously specific casket, so they didn't know who else to go to, so they just prayed to Rita right there that she would cure him, and she did. And there's been hundreds of tales of healing at her gravesite, at her tomb, and they last even today. She has a very close relationship and association with bees, as you heard in my opening story. And not many saints have these animal tie-ins, but Rita does. And it's said that as a child, bees would fly in and out of her open mouth, never harming her. Her parents saw this as a sign of protection for some reason. And it's said that for hundreds of years, there's been a bee's nest in Rita's cell. It's still there. And it's said that the bees leave during Holy Week and they arrive again after Easter. And it's said that bees will appear after praying to Rita as a sign that she heard your prayer. All right, so let's talk about incorporating Rita into your spirituality. Her feast day is May 22nd, which is the day that she died. And typically roses are blessed in churches on this day in her honor. You see that more in Italy than anywhere else. And the blessed roses can be used for your own altar, your own space for healing, and much more. So grape leaves and roses are usually blessed and used. It's a very folksy tradition. Oftentimes I feel like when we get into folk Catholicism, people think it's this subversive, sneaky practice, but a lot of times traditional Catholics are doing these very, very folksy things that the church doesn't disapprove of or approve of, but they just still do them. So healing with grape leaves, healing with roses, using them for blessings is beautiful. She's the patron of course, impossible causes. She's known for being a very generous and responsive saint in the same vein as Saint Anthony. And also like Anthony, she has devotees and admirers from many spiritual backgrounds. She's the patron of widows, of divorced women, women who have suffered from any form of trauma or abuse, and she's a great protector of those who might still have abusive or harmful men in their lives. It said she can also heal infertility and assist in women's health overall. Offerings to put on your altar during novenas and such, roses, figs, candles. Much like Saint Therese, Rita is affiliated with roses because of the story of her cousin going and fetching roses in the middle of an ice storm. So similar to the bees, when a prayer is answered, if you don't see a bee, you might see a rose or a pink flower, or you'll smell roses or flowers, which is very common with a lot of saints. You see that with Mary, with Padre Pio, and more. You also have this tradition called the Little Breads of Saint Rita, which again is very folksy, but still very common. Augustinian nuns that will bake breads that are blessed, and they're distributed in times of illness or bad weather for protection. So these nuns will sell bread that has been blessed and is supposed to heal your spirit. There's also a ritual called the 15 Thursdays of Devotion. And it's the 15 weeks before her feast day, which is May 22nd, where you pray and petition Rita each Thursday. And this is a formal ritual, and there's plenty of books and commentaries that include opening prayers, closing prayers, meditations on her life, and more. However, there's a ritual that I really like with Saint Rita. I hear so much about the cord cutting, and I like cord cutting. I think it's very classic. However, did you know that cord cutting was actually initially done as reconciliation, not separation? Nonetheless, I enjoy this one. I'm going to say more, but just as much as cord cutting. And it is, it's called the Saint Rita ex-husband ritual, but it can be any kind of separation. What you do is you place a bouquet of roses dedicated to Rita in a vase. I would probably put a prayer card or a relic card in front of the vase as well. Or if you have a Rita statue, of course, use that. Now what you're going to do, you're going to sprinkle a circle of baking soda around the vase. I'm really not sure why, to be honest, but it's baking soda. However, I have also seen this done with blessed salt. I have so much blessed salt on my altar, so that would be my preference, particularly blessed salt mixed with biblical herbs, such as hyssop, mustard seed, things like that. But baking soda works too. That's the more common that you'll see. So you have your circle of baking soda or blessed salt, and your bouquet of roses. And now you are going to burn your marriage certificate, some other document of your union, or anything sentimental. Photos, gifts, anything. Rings, whatever. So you're gonna burn that in the circle next to the flowers. Of course, maybe use a heat-safe dish or bowl. Don't just like throw it on the, you know, don't just light something with Florida water or gasoline next to a bouquet of roses, obviously. But very simple. And then while it burns, you invoke Rita's aid. And I just really like this. It's so simple. A bouquet of roses, a big old circle of salt or baking soda, and then let's burn the stuff that is you're holding on to, burning those memories, burning those things. And then as it burns, watch it and just pray to Rita. That's another thing I love about saints, is that yes, you could use a prayer that has been used, some of them for hundreds, if not thousands of years, and those work well. But oftentimes you can just speak from your heart, invoke Rita. Saint Rita, help me. Saint Rita, this situation is still holding me down spiritually, mentally, and even physically because the anguish and trauma I'm feeling is making me suffer. Saint Rita, as this burns, burn away the pain that I'm feeling. Speak from your heart. That's what matters the most when praying to the saints. Anyway, this is Saint Rita ex-husband ritual, one of my favorites. And of course, with all saints, and every few episodes, I feel like I need to bring this up again. Some saints have some inherently folksy practices. The ex-husband ritual, ex-lover ritual, ex-best friend ritual, whatever you want to call it. It's wonderful, it's beautiful, it's folksy. But man, 9 days with a novena candle in a Saint Rita prayer card, that's going to do amazing things. Just 9 days of prayer. Of course, do this too if you have to, but if what you're dealing with is not something along the lines of burning something, or you want to make it a 9-day healing thing, just do a novena. Novenas in of themselves are inherently mystical and magical. You are lighting a candle and you're praying to an ancient, sometimes ancient spirit, using sometimes ancient prayers. So a member of God's army will petition on your behalf and intercede for you. Like, these are magical in of themselves. So I'm not always gonna have these folksy rituals. I do with Rita, and it's beautiful, but don't underestimate a novena. They're incredible. So key takeaways for the great St. Rita of Kashia. I think one of my key takeaways is I'm doing this during October, during spooky season, and it's because there's all this wonderful imagery that can be very darkly expressed. Her appearing with her festering wound, her spirit driving away abusive men, teleporting and appearing in a convent. It's all very spooky and mystical, but at the end of the day, what an amazing saint. What an amazing woman. Her tie-in with impossible causes makes sense. There was a dream she wanted to master her entire life. She just wanted to be a nun. And no one would let her, but she did it. She didn't think she could escape her abusive husband or terrible children, and she did. I'm sure when she was a bit of a recluse with her stigmata, she did not know that she'd become a saint or beloved, but I'm sure she prayed that she would be like a saint, and she became one. And those impossible causes go beyond someone we can pray to when we're being abused or someone else is being harmed. It's any impossible cause in our life. When we reach out to the divine, it's often because we feel like something is impossible. So Saint Rita is more than just a spooky Halloween time saint that I'm talking about. She's an incredible, incredible intercessor. She was also a mother, and I think that's very important because it's rare for saints. The vast majority of saints, both men and women, were not parents, but Rita was. So she can understand what it's like being just a human, what it's like being a child, and of course, what it's like being a mother. And again, just such a generous saint, an active saint. So spend some time with her. She won't judge you. She will welcome you. As always, let's end this with a prayer. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Dear God, words like possible and impossible mean very little to you, because nothing is impossible to you, God. But the difficult, the painful, the harmful, the scary, those are words that your saints can understand. Your great Saint Rita, she understood impossibility. She understood pain and she understood sorrow. And God, there are many people on earth right now who have their throats snatched up by the vile one. And he's winning. He's pushing these people into abuse, into being evil, into harming others, into being the opposite of what you have intended, Father. So you've sent saints like Rita, who will protect us from their vileness. And in doing so, Rita will bring us closer to God and the abusers further away from us. So God, we thank you for your great saints like Saint Rita of Kashia, who will protect us, who will help us overcome the impossible, and will remove those in our lives who make us stray further from you. Saint Rita, patroness of the sorrowful, protector of the scared, advocate of the abused, the patroness of the impossible, pray for us. This has been another episode of St. Anthony's Tongue. Thank you so much for tuning in. This was a very fun episode to write and record. I'm so excited to share it with you. Thank you for all your love. And remember, watch out for the bees.